Yeah, this is working, so still exhausted from my own talk. So let's try to get into this discussion. A lot of things that, actually, you know, it's we haven't sort of rehearsed this before. I was very curious to hear what the other ones were saying. We're not prepared at all. We hear the talks for the first time. So there is indeed plenty of things to discuss. And one of the things that I perhaps sort of throw in for you is there was this moment where you talked about the markers of time, which somehow, you know, Chris Marker is a chosen name. It's not his real name. But perhaps you could sort of, you know, into order to get into this, say again, you know, what are these markers of time that you were sort of mentioning?
This works, right?
Yeah.
One of the things that, because the movie is made of stills, and we're used to, in the age of cinematography, we're used to seeing narrative as the moving image. I think that that already is the initial gesture that makes us rethink the relation between the still and the moving as we usually know it. So it throws us in a loop. In which we're no longer, the cadence, the rhythm of the film is no longer the 24 frames per second going through your eyes. So we're in a swampland. How do we know how long the film is? What is, you know, what are the actual markers? You know, this is the Third World War, but when did it take place?
You mentioned also the sort of the sites where this movie is shot, the where the airplane is, the museum,
the jetty.
So the jetty and the other locations, and they also, if I understood you correctly, you know, work as markers of time. Is that correct?
Yes, and as spaces of time travel, I think once you're in the movie, you no longer know what presence is, what is now, what is the here and now. And the characters are really traveling in time all the time. They're in their imagination, they're fantasizing, there's a lot of fantasizing, there's a lot of waiting, there's a lot of anticipation. And I think that the poetic choice of these, the where you're gonna get on the train, where you're gonna get on the plane, where you're walking, strolling in a museum, waiting for a date, you know, what do you call the boy and girl story, are moments where there's no simultaneity until there's the meeting.
Until this year.
So that's what, you know, after seeing La Jetée, after thinking about it, you know, one can go back and read Einstein's 1905 famous paper and see his phrase about how he defines simultaneity. And again, it's him on a train station saying the pointing of my hand to 7 and the arrival of the train are simultaneous events.
Okay.
You know, why the train, why the jetty?
Mm-hmm.
Because when somebody departs, you know, they really leave. It's also the way that one can define simultaneity as a now, mm-hmm. you know, as a moment that does not contain any time in itself.
Yeah, Stefan, perhaps you can, because, you know, I mean, so Ximena directs our attention to the places of encounters, right? I mean, where
that's
boy and girl meets
made,
and where
sense.
simultaneity happens.
Yeah.
The
waiting
room,
stops, the encounter.
The real room that your picture was showing is not exactly a space where an encounter takes place. Or perhaps there's also an encounter that takes place, but it's a different one. It has to do with the time the scientists are producing and the sort of reality that our protagonist or hero, as you said, is sort of getting into. It's a sort of portal. It's a window, in a sense, this room, to get into the past.
The jetty.
the room that you were showing, no?
The chambre, the image that you showed.
I mean, first of all, I'd like to say that I had doubts we talked about the same film. I mean, it's interesting that we, I mean, we, especially this, when you started to reenact the scientists' language. I heard saw the film so often, but I never really cared about what they were saying because they're so whispering. But when you reenacted it, it became a new film again when you really profile what they were murmuring or mumbling. Mm-hmm. Of course, they are quite different spaces, and this is, even if we talk about the 62 world, so a world that is, in a way, the past level, but for the audience, the real-time level, this morning ordinary room is quite different to the jetty itself. And, of course, the jetty is extremely strong. And also the jetty is somehow feels quite alien, and it's also different, I would say, to the station, because at the station maybe it's also a question of time when we talk about it, because maybe in the 19th century the station was also quite terrifying place. Actually, it was. I mean, there is a Western, I think, John Wayne, where he first time sees a train coming, he's terrified. Even this Western guy is totally shocked about this forthcoming, but for maybe for us, at least for me, still airplanes are still somehow fascinating and strange and terrifying some extent. And this jetty, in a way, is not even where something taking place, because this is a place where people only have stroll with their kids, seeing other airplanes pass. Mm-hmm. And so somehow it's connected to a very open situation and to this what airplane travel is about and talked about it, and it's in a way the counterpart to the ordinary, what really takes place, and in a way it's out of that, because maybe it's also out of ordinary life, because the other thing is just the common, the everyday place. And of course, we have quite different approaches to that, in the sense of that I was rather pursuing the idea that this is what is really taking place, and like it, we could also understand it as a delusion, as you did.
Yeah, I mean, there is a text by Marca on Hitchcock's Vertigo, and he makes the argument, he makes the point that the second half of the entire movie is not actually happening, but it's rather only the sort of fantasy of Scotty that is, in sort of bad shape and still in the sort of psychiatric hospital, and he's fantasizing all of this. And I think against that background, I sort of tried this hypothesis that maybe in this film, I mean, at least it remains unclear, I think, whether or not he's actually really traveling into something that is still existing there. I mean, you made this very sort of explicit. You said, you know, they create this hole in time and he travels there. And it's true. I mean, my reading is sort of different, because if you follow the argument, it would be sort of only a kind of delusion that he's in. The entire project of these scientists would be failing, and you know it would sort of coincide with the death of this test person that went through a psychotic crisis and has fantasized about, you know, being traveling to the past, and that's it. So there's no way out then. Yeah.
But there's a third interpretation, right? That he might not be, you know, actually. There's the one of going into the past, the one of him being in a delusion, and then the third one of him being in a movie, watching a movie where this is all, you know, the fact that he uses the director and that he this takes place at the Cinémathèque Française, and going back to your point, that this is a movie that makes us feel as the experimental subject, because he, with his eyes closed, and his memories passing before him as a film.
So I wonder how these various readings of the movie, I mean, relate to the sort of political implications we are seeing in the movie, right? I mean, they seem all to be tied to different versions of the
One would be a critique of the society of the spectacle, in a sense. Then the other one would be the critique of the science, the scientist who actually kills the subject. And I think the one where he goes to the past would be the utopian. Where they succeed. They're actually.
Okay. I mean, we also have to decide whether we want to understand the film in terms of what the author might have was thinking about, or because he is also forced to develop something in a certain kind of framework. And I sure think that, of course, Marker is very much connected to questions of memory, but I don't think that's so decisive in the film. And I mean, there are a lot of other films with that genre that things that happen in the film turn out to be dreams. I mean, of course, in a way, Matrix, after a certain time, you understand everything you saw is only a dream, and you have this big biopolitical figure that you have these bio bodies being in a battery of living cells. And this, in a way, is different in that film. So it's not about only that bodies are energy suppliers, which is a very important figure in biopolitical discussions, but in a different way. And maybe it would be interesting, we didn't mention, and I didn't have time to go on that, to discuss that solution that the film somehow brings about, because what is most appealing, of course, is the boy meets girl story in a way. I mean, it's quite some time, and it's not like in Vanilla Sky, where the guy meets the woman that he thinks he would like to love, then of course falls in love with him also. We finally understand this only because it was his dream. This is not the case here. I mean, they start to have a certain kind of relationship, and in a way she is given as being the, like Jean-Louis Schaeffer was writing, also linked by Marker, that she's the face of time and its content. Of course, this is a very well-known figure, woman as replacement for life or for the thing itself. And he's somehow also in fulfilling this kind of genre, boys meet girls, going in that direction in a certain way. But it is connected to a very derive-like wandering around of these. They have an understanding without saying too much. Of course, this is also a figure of the time, of a big limbo, like in the English version, they have the word limbo, kind of a Vorhölle between good and bad, where your soul is saved.
Yeah. Okay. It's perhaps a good moment for trying to get the audience into this. And so if you have questions or comments to what's going on here on stage, feel free to raise your hand and to ask, whether in German or in English. I think it's pretty much the same. Yeah.
Ist das Limbo oder Mambo? Das ist Limbus. Limbus. Ich denke auch, die Engländer werden das Lateinisch sprechen. Das andere ist ein seltsamer, ich kenne den Film nicht, deshalb die Frage. Man sieht also ein ziemlich unzerstörtes Zimmer und einen Blick aus einem unzerstörten Glasfenster auf eine unzerstörte Straßenfront. Und das soll jetzt also nach dem Atomkrieg gewesen sein? Dann habe ich das falsch verstanden.
Ja, also das werden Sie gleich sehen. Das ist quasi sozusagen seine erste Annäherung an die heil gebliebene Vergangenheit vor dem Krieg.
Okay, alles klar.
Ja, okay. Ja, bitte. Warten Sie einen Augenblick, damit Sie ein Mikro bekommen und wir Sie gut hören können hier vorne. Danke.
Ja, etwas, also Ich habe den Film schon ganz oft gesehen und was mir erst neulich irgendwie so klar geworden
ist... Halten Sie das bitte ein bisschen.
Als ich so ein bisschen in diese Nachkriegswissenschaft oder instrumentelle Psychologie reingeforscht habe, das ist natürlich, dass es sehr in diesem Zeitgeist ist, nach dem Koreakrieg, diese ganzen Experimente mit Mind Control, dass halt da, das, also dieser Zeitgeist, den kann man jetzt gar nicht mehr so nachvollziehen, aber dass eben, wenn man sich so Fotos anguckt, wie man versucht hat, gerade in dieser Zeit irgendwie Gehirnströme zu messen, wie man irgendwie verschiedene, also Sensory Deprivation Experimente, diese ganzen Sachen, das ist halt ein unglaublicher Akt, also diese Bilder, die findet man eigentlich genau auch wieder in den Fotografien von diesen Experimenten wieder.
Ja, vielleicht sammeln wir einfach ein bisschen, also bitte.
Mich würde interessieren, Sie haben, glaube ich, es angesprochen, ob Sie vielleicht ein paar Sätze über das Ende sagen können. Oder einfach, genau, ich glaube, Sie haben es ein bisschen schon angesprochen, ob Sie über das Ende reden können oder wirklich das, was da zum Schluss passiert, diese Form von Gleichzeitigkeit, die da stattfindet, ob Sie da vielleicht einfach...
Was meinen Sie jetzt genau? Sagen. Ich muss sagen, ich weiß jetzt gar nicht, was Sie da, also am Ende...
Die das ist ein Moment, den er feststellt und ich habe es jetzt nicht mehr ganz in Erinnerung, aber ich glaube, es ist der letzte Satz im Film und ist jetzt auch den Moment, ja, den er dann wieder
findet. Also er kommt wieder auf dieses La Jetée, auf diesen Jetty da zurück am Flughafen und Sie meinen dann dieses Finale da quasi, wo er...
Genau.
Dann, okay, ja. Vielleicht wollen wir noch eine Frage vielleicht dazu nehmen und dann versuchen wir einfach ein bisschen... gesammelt zu antworten. Ja. Haben wir noch was? Ich sehe nichts. Okay, dann denke ich, machen wir noch eine Runde eben. Vielleicht willst du was sagen zu dem Ende.
I don't know whether we want to spoil the end. And of course it's very complicated, the end. I read somewhere also as a critique that it's intriguing the way that it's a paradox at the end, because I mean he enters the past as a grown up, but the past of his childhood, but he does it realita again in the sense of that he's twice in that reality, because he's as a grown up and as a kid, and also the 12 Monkeys makes out of this scenario a big scene at the airport. That he ends up being shot, what he knew from the beginning, because he saw somebody being killed. So then it's clear again, because he's only once there anymore. But and of course, it's a total paradox, but it's like an Escher room, it's impossible.
Going back to the sort of, you know, the three ways of understanding it, and he actually, you know, the one that he actually goes to the past, the one where it's a delusion or he's in a spectacle, that becomes a trope for science fiction movies, and Wikipedia traces the grandfather paradox to 1945, and I don't think that that's correct, but somehow, sometime around that, and it would be a very interesting question of when did this become, you know, a dominant trope for science fiction travel, time travel films, that you go back to the past and you sort of, you kill the possibility of your own existence.
And in a way, Einstein would be the father Einstein, of it, and the one who said it's impossible, exactly, as I understood you.
Exactly. This was a discussion right around the theory of relativity.
I would like perhaps to conclude, come back to the question about mind control and the sort of experimental psychology, torturing stuff. I can only agree. I think that's a quite important element here. And I mean, he deals with and describes techniques that are used or are meant for sort of controlling, I would say, you know, controlling and experimentally sort of producing recollections, thoughts, images, and so on. And I would argue...
would you say that the serum in scientific terms would be LSD?
I thought about this, connected
to the Korean War and the, you know, the laboratory looks like a heroin.
It could be also a drug laboratory. It could be an LSD or it could be a mescaline laboratory. But you know, I was intrigued by this sort of, I mean, the way that this eye mask is connected to cables and the fact that a lot of, you know, other forms of glasses are showing up in the movie, and that one of the decisive moments in the movie is actually a moving eye that looks at us. And, you know, without knowing whether or not Marker actually, you know, wanted to make this point, today I would read it sort of radically against the background of sort of Google Glasses. Yeah, I mean.
And strobe research.
Right.
Yeah, sensory deprivation and sensory hyper. Yeah.
Okay, I think we're somebody who's raising his hand, please.
One comment concerning the end. Only one point regarding the end. I mean, it's not the case that the little boy is killed in the scene, so that he kills off his own existence, but it's the other way around. So the irony of the whole thing is that the memory that has allowed him to enter his past is the memory of his own death. Of his own future death or the death of his future self. And so what this might tell us is one thing we could consider is that superimposition plays a huge role in the film. So the superimposition of the past and the future. So the memory that allows him to access the past is one of the future, of his future self and of his death. And also, I mean, the way in which the scientists work as kind of memories of German Nazi scientists located in the future. So I think that's a major trope of the whole film.
Thank you. So I think that's the perfect introduction for, you know, the rest of this session, namely actually the movie. And I thank Jimena and Stefan.
Thank you very much.
For being here, and Bernscher for having made this possible. And thank you for the discussion, and we're all looking forward to the movie, I think. Thank you.
Thank you.